It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, drama featuring players of the silver screen. We hear Fred McMurray and Irene Dunne later in the hour on The Bright Star Show. Right now, it's one of MGM's biggest stars in her heyday, Norma Shearer, as leading lady in Art Obler's Everyman's Theater. Great radio next, with Hans Conried and Howard Duff co-starring from December 20th, 1940 on NBC. The play is The Women Stayed at Home.
Everyman's Theater, written and created by Arch Obler. Oxydol presents Miss Norma Shearer in a thrilling love story, The Women Stayed at Home, with a special symphonic accompaniment of Wagner's deathless love music, Tristan and Isolde. And here is our writer-creator, Arch Obler, who will introduce tonight's play.
The scene, a windswept coast. It is night. For once the sea is calm. It waits ominously upon the edge of shore where sits a woman and an old man. For a long time they have sat quietly, but now the woman speaks to the old man, and her words lift out to the sea on the rush of the wind.
Lonely. Yes, I was lonely. And I did what I did because I was lonely. I can tell you. This is a quiet place. My father built here because he and mother had each other. And they wanted the lonesomeness. The village over there and we away from all the rest. My father wanted it that way. When I was very young, it was all right. I could run with the other children. It was all right. But when I grew older, it was lonely. The sea, the wind, the gulls flying. Is that enough for a girl? Yes. I was very lonely. Father died at sea. A storm. His boat. Then mother. For the first time, I really was alone. People who have nothing remember the little things they've had, don't they? I remember things so clearly. The way the clouds were one day when the sun went down. A boat that stood out on the horizon and then in a second went under. The way so many of... No. Why talk of that? I'll tell you of John. He came to the village a month after Mother died. He had a pack on his back and a smile that lifted the heart. I met him right where we sit.
Hello, girl.
Oh,
I'm sorry if I startled you.
I didn't know that...
Yes, I know. My mother used to say it of me, too. I had to walk like a cat on tiptoe. Ah, it's a pleasant day.
Yes, isn't it?
Where are you from?
That house.
Oh. It's a strange, lonely place to build a house, isn't it?
Yes.
May I tell you my name? It's John Clark.
How do you do?
Would you tell me yours?
Celia Harris.
Celia? There's a name. Yes, from a boat.
What?
Oh, I beg your pardon. It's your name, isn't it? I've no right to use it.
You said a boat?
Yes. Yes, my boat. I'm going to make a living at fishing. That's why I came here. And I've got a new boat. Well, not exactly new. And I've been beating out the inside of my head trying to think of a lucky name for it. Celia. Ah, it's a lovely name. Do you mind if I tell you that? Do you mind?
I didn't mind. I didn't mind anything he told me. The village was so happy the day we married. It's good to remember.
Seal.
Yes, darling?
Now's the chance.
What?
To get away from them.
Oh, but John.
Shh, now quiet. Now slip easy as a ghost around the corner. Now, come on, run.
Oh, they'll never forgive us.
Go on now. It's the dancing and the drinking that they're after. Now, come on. Faster.
Oh, I can't.
Yes,
oh,
you
really?
Can, Seal. Come on now.
Oh, no, John, no.
What?
I can't. Not another step. Oh, it's beating so. My heart.
My heart.
John.
Oh, I want you.
I'm yours.
Always mine. Always mine.
Always mine. He said that. Always mine. Tell me, how long is always? Is always the moment he held me, and his lips were tight on mine, and his arms held me, and he... No. Why should I ask? I really know. Always with him was that night. Because the next night...
Cast off! Cast off!
Aye, aye.
Goodbye, darling. I'll be picking about you. Having a good catch on for you. I'll be in a fortnight, darling. Just in a fortnight. He said that to me. But in a fortnight, he was...
dead.
I think it. I can't say it. It's been so long, and yet I can only think it.
Dead.
Do you know what that means?
We have come here to say the last words for the soul of the one whom the sea has taken to the Lord. Goodbye, John Clark. The Lord in his wisdom has buried you in the boundless grave of the ocean. We bow our heads, and we weep our tears. We have the memory of you.
Do you know what that meant? I was alone again. Yes, alone again. The Widow Clark.
The Widow Clark.
I ran from the village, back up the long path to my house, and all the way it was tearing in me. I was alone again. Alone again. But a new loneliness, a horrible loneliness. When you've had nothing, all right, you know nothing. But I've known something now. His look, his laugh, his lips, his arms, the crush of his arms. I was alone again. A day and a night. A day and a night. One after the other. An empty day after an empty night. That's what was ahead of me. And that's what I had. An empty day and an empty night. An empty day and an empty night. Over and over and over. And there was no end. There could be no end until there was an end of me. No end to it. Until there was an end of me. And then...
Whoa!
I heard it from far down the village. I couldn't quite understand. One of the men waving his arms at me and shouting.
War!
War? War? But everybody had said... But wait. If war had come, there'd be something for me to do. Yes. Fill the emptiness in me with something to do. Yes!
I'm sorry, Widow Clark, but there's nothing for you to do. Everything's been taken care of in the proper manner. Sorry, Widow Clark, there's nothing for you to do.
Nothing for me to do. Nothing for me. Nothing for me.
Navy blockade them.
You are to naval battle.
Submarine.
Army.
But nothing for me. War means something to those who have something to live for, to fight for. But when you have nothing... Empty days after empty nights. Over again, And again I began to think.
No end to it until there is an end to me.
Why not? Walk into the sea. Let the sea fill my emptiness. Cover my loneliness. Why not? Why not? I left the house and walked toward the sea. The sand crushed beneath my feet the way it did that night. That night he ran with me. The water was dark. I was at the edge and into it. Deeper and deeper into it. Cold against me. Cold as the days and the nights. But this coldness would end, and with that ending put a finish to the ache in me. And then something touched me. I looked down, white in the water. A hand.
John.
The thought echoing in my head, and then no. A stranger. Someone. I dragged him out of the water to the beach. A stranger drowned in the sea. Dead, yes. But no. My ear against the wet of him. His heart, yes. The beat of it. Faint, but the beat of it. Dragged him, carried him to the house. Warmed him, hour after hour. And slowly the beat lifted with the blood in him. Stronger and stronger. Morning. He opened his eyes. In the first light of the sun, I saw they were blue. As blue as John's had been.
Mosa.
His first words, what?
Mosa.
Who? I ran to where I'd thrown the clothes, the buttons, words on them. He was the enemy. The enemy. I knew what I had to do. Go down to the village. Say, listen, everybody! A man from an enemy boat. Caught him! Come and get him! An enemy. Come and get him. I went back to where he lay. He was sleeping, though. Sleeping. I looked at him. Something twisted in my heart. He slept the way John slept that night. Head in the crook of his arm. Sandy hair curling down on her forehead, smooth and brown. He slept that night.
Listen, everybody! An enemy!
Yes, I must tell them. I must. He slept. Woke for a few hours, then slept again. Let him sleep, I told myself. There'll be time to tell them tomorrow. But I didn't tell them tomorrow. He was sick. I had to make him well. Then I would tell them. How many days went? I don't remember. All I remember is moments.
Bart.
What did you say?
Bart.
No. That's a bird. Bird.
Bert.
That's very good. Pretty bird.
Pretty bird. Pretty bird.
So I began to teach him how to speak my language.
I, you, me.
Why not? I wanted him to speak the way I did.
Me, they, my.
In the prison camp, it would help him to know our language.
So
I taught him.
Sleep. I am car. I am car. I am car.
Good. Now try something else.
I am car. You are...
Celia. Say, how do you do, Celia?
How are you do, Celia?
No. How do you do?
How do you do, Celia? I am car. I am car.
Soon he was well enough to be up and about. I gave him a suit of John's to wear. He would sit in a window looking out at the sea, and I would work. And listen to him. It was good. It was good to know that someone was there.
I wasn't lonely anymore. Not lonely. Can you understand what that means? To have had nothing and then to have something. Someone to talk to listen to, to laugh with, to...
Naval battles!
Submarine!
Army! Navy!
Army! Navy!
Army! Navy!
But I had to tell them. I had to. Had to? And then I began to ask myself why. What had I to do with war? What had I to do with enemies?
Sorry, Widow Clark. There's nothing for you to do. Everything's been taken care of in the proper manner. Sorry, Widow Clark. There's nothing for you to do.
Celia, you are very good to me.
He was no enemy to me. Just Carl. And his eyes were blue. And his face was gentle. And when he smiled, his lips... No. How could I tell him? And then... It happened.
Celia, who is there?
I don't know. No one ever comes up here.
You must answer.
Hide!
No, trouble, the police, they'll take
you. Hide, I tell you, quickly.
Well, 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 I'd begun to wonder if you were home.
Oh, Mr. Stanford, what do you want?
Want? Now, there's a question. Climb all the way down that infernal path and look at me as if I brought you bad news. Well, I don't, and that's a fact.
Well?
I'll tell you plain enough. A chance to do your duty. Yes, and I'm the one who fixed it for you.
What?
What? Have you no other word but what? Your duty in this war, of course. The district teacher's off to join his regiment. You come down to the district schoolhouse 3 times a week and teach the children. A chance to do your duty, Widow Clark. For God and country.
For God and country? Teach the children. Come down to the schoolhouse. Leave him.
I will be all right, Celia. Go. I will be all right.
So I went. Down to the village again. And heard of many things down in the village.
They're drowning all men.
They're swamping the lifeboat.
They're swamping the lifeboat.
They. Oh, yes, the enemy. Drowning and bombing and killing. They. The enemy. All day long, all I heard, the enemy. I climbed the path. Back to the house at sundown. He was waiting.
Celia, I'm very happy to see you.
I said nothing. What could I say? We ate. It grew dark. He didn't speak again. Just looked at me. And then, suddenly, it was as if he were gone. As if I had told him, and he'd been taken away. I was alone again. Alone again and lonely. No one near me. No one to talk to. The emptiness of the days again. No. I couldn't go back to that again. I couldn't. The next day... Down to the village again. I wouldn't listen this time, I told myself. But in the schoolhouse, it was my brother, ma'am, on the boat they torpedoed yesterday. They killed my only brother, ma'am. They again. They again.
They're drowning our men!
They're killing our sons!
They're killing our fathers!
They're drowning our men! They're drowning our men!
They!
No, I turned, I ran. Away from them. They. No more days. He was only one. Only one. And he was in my house. And he was in my heart. All right, I said it. In my heart. He spoke to me that night.
Celia, I want to say something to you, please.
Yes, Carl.
You are not happy.
No.
It is me. I know I'm...
Carl, please.
If I could speak well enough to tell you...
What?
That
all these days I've been with you, I've been thinking, and I have been learning that what you and your people think is right. And because it is right, it will live. I know that now. And so the hate is not ours, not yours, not mine.
Oh, Carl.
Oh, Celia. Not yours, not mine.
I love you, Carl. I love you, Carl. So I said it. And his arms came close around me. And there was no earth or sky or death. The days after that, days that stood still in wonder, and then in rush were gone. Warm days, lazy days, wonderful days. Days when the sky reached down and lifted us up to the clouds, and we... Oh, Carl. Carl. And then the new day. A morning. Sun awakened me. Stretched out my hand. I cried. Not very long. You see, I understood. Always in our days together, there's been a cloud. And with each passing day, that cloud would have grown larger and larger until there was no warmth of sun for us. The cloud of fear. Fear that someone of the village would see us. See him, and seeing him end my world for me. And he knew that. And so he went away. Where? I don't know. I like to think he took a boat during the night and sailed out to sea in it, back to where he came from, back to his small village by the cliffs. I like to think that. I know someday the fighting will be over. It must end. He said it.
And so the hate is not ours, not yours, not mine.
It will end. He'll come back to me. And I'll never be lonely anymore.
This is Arch Obler. Tonight it has been a great privilege to bring you Norma Shearer in my play, The Women Stayed at Home. All of us here, and I know you out there, are grateful to Miss Shearer for her stirring performance. With Miss Shearer were Hans Conried and Howard Duff. The special arrangement of Wagner's Tristan and Isolde was arranged and conducted by Gordon Jenkins.
Everyman's Theater on Tuned to Yesterday, an Arch Obler production from December 20th, 1940 on NBC. The program was set against the backdrop of the Second World War, though the United States would not officially enter the conflict for another year after that broadcast. The leading lady of the play, Norma Shearer, like many actors and actresses of World War II, helped raise the morale of the troops at home with organizations like the USO, and also when her pictures were shown overseas, being such a popular star, naturally raised the morale of the troops fighting there. Even Anne Frank, who chronicled her time hiding out from the Nazi occupation of Amsterdam, had several movie star photos on the wall of the secret annex she hid out in with her family. Reportedly, Norma Shearer was one of them. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now it's on to Bright Star, the first in a syndicated series from October 23, 1952, an oil stock swindle ahead with movie stars Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray, Harry Von Zell, the announcer.
Starring Irene Dunne as Susan and Fred McMurray as George. Together in the gay, new, exciting comedy adventure, Bright Star.
Have you heard what happened on the Star?
Did you hear what he said to her?
Do you know what she told him?
Yes, the whole town's talking. The Star they're talking about is the Morning Star, a newspaper. The her they're talking about is Susan. Lovely, attractive, headstrong Susan. And the him? Well, you can see him right now walking down the street over there. Yes, and believe me, if he knew what was about to happen, he wouldn't be whistling.
Hey, Jack.
Yeah? Oh, you mean me?
Yeah, yeah. You a reporter, writes pieces for the paper and stuff, ain't you?
That's right.
Uh-huh. Well, let's step into this alley here, will you? I got an item for you.
News, eh? Sure, sure.
Right here's a good place.
Yeah, the sun was kind of hot out there anyway.
Yeah.
Well, friend, what's this item you got?
Well, it's strictly personal, chum. You've been making inquiry around about concerning the guaranteed, always flowing oil development company, huh?
True, I have.
Yeah, you've been saying like that company ain't on a level.
Well, you might say I entertain certain doubts.
Look, let's make it simple, eh, chum? You've been saying that you are going to print that stuff in the Hillsdale Morning Star.
Those are my intentions.
Yeah, well, the president of our company, Mr. Carter Gaston, he asked me to convince you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Print nothing but praise about our company, or I am going to see that you land in the obituary column.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fair warning, friend. But I think I should tell you that I used to be heavyweight champion at my college.
Oh, you was a champion?
Yeah. Don't believe me, eh?
Well, yeah, sure, champ, sure, but... Wonder just what college he went to.
Hi, Mr. Harvey. Wow, an altercation with a truck?
I'll exchange witticisms with you later, Sammy. I want to see Miss Armstrong.
Sure. Who doesn't?
Susan, I've got something to say to you.
I'm on the phone, George. Really, Mr. Gaston? No. No! Well, he just came in, Mr. Gaston, and I'll certainly talk to him. Not at all. Goodbye, and thank you for calling, Mr. Gaston.
Susan, I've got something to say to you.
George, really? Look at your suit.
Well, suits get this way when they've been bounced around in the gutter. Occupants still inside.
Oh?
Oh, she says. Try to control your vast outpouring of sympathy, Miss Armstrong. About this phony oil outfit that everybody in town is falling for...
I've just heard from Mr. Gaston, George. He told me how you assaulted that poor little salesman of his.
He what?
What made you do it, George?
Sunspots. Now listen, Susan. I'm going to write an article blasting Gaston and his crooked outfit from here to...
Just what proof have you?
Well, none. Yet. But I'll have...
George... I know character. I've talked to Mr. Gaston over the phone, and from what Alderman Connolly tells me
Alderman
about
Connolly, he's as hard to bribe as a head waiter.
I know character, George.
Will you stop saying that?
Shouting will not convince me.
All right, all right. So we won't print anything. So Gaston sells his phony oil stock to the whole town. You happy?
Do I have to remind you, George?
That you're the editor, I know. No. That you inherited the paper from your father and did very nicely before I arrived. Granted. That I have a nasty, suspicious mind. I concur. Have I left out anything? Oh, yes, yes, yes. You know character.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Actually, George, you worry me with all your suspicions. Why don't you come to dinner tonight and we'll talk things over?
Comfort. All right. But if you think you're going to bribe me with food, you're right.
Working late tonight, Mr. Harvey? Lift your feet, huh?
Yeah. I'm just filing away the time till 6:30, Sammy.
Filing away. Okay, put them down. You and the boss can live things up a little tonight?
Miss Armstrong has been kind enough to invite me for a platonic dinner, yes.
Ha.
For one so young, Sammy, you have a very nasty ha.
Ha.
Miss Armstrong is interested in me only as a reporter.
That phrase can have a very sad history, Mr. Harvey.
Sweep your floor, Sammy.
You know, you could be a success, Mr. Harvey, if you wanted to be.
Your confidence touches me.
Why don't you marry Miss Armstrong and let her take you out of all this?
Thank you, Horatio Alger.
Anytime. 6:15, Mr. Harvey.
No, thanks. Oh, say, Sammy, you haven't got a couple of bucks for a box of chocolates, have you?
There's a romantic imagination. Chocolates. Take her an orchid. A single rose.
A single rose? Sammy, have you got a buck for a single rose?
No.
Well, it's time to go.
Visitor, Mr. Harvey.
Yeah, so I see.
Good evening, boy reporters. Miss Armstrong here.
What's it to you?
What's it to you? I wish I'd said that. Gets things like that off all the time, this kid.
You should hear him when he's hot.
Stay off my side, Sammy. Miss Armstrong's not here, and she won't be back.
Well, I don't blame her. Take a message. My boss, Mr. Gaston, he's a very big man in oil. He enjoyed talking to Miss Armstrong on the phone today. He wishes her to call on him at his hotel suite tomorrow. Can you remember all that, or should I write it down?
Don't bother. Incidentally, chum, that was a pretty lucky punch you got in this afternoon.
Well, it happens all the time.
You think you could do it again?
It figures.
Mr. Harvey, the paper needs you.
Stand aside, Sammy. This won't take long. All right, you.
Poor Mr. Harvey.
Wonder what else he learned in college.
How's the dinner coming, patients? Mr. Harvey should be here in a minute.
Everything's under control, Miss Armstrong.
Well, I want things to be especially nice tonight, patients. Mr. Harvey and I have been having, well, one of our disagreements.
No.
But he was quite nice about coming to dinner.
Big of him. Let's see. He doesn't get paid until tomorrow. Was he nice or just weak from hunger?
Now, George, always speak very well of you, patients. And your cooking, too.
No fool, Georgie. What time is old freeloader due?
About 6:30. I thought we might have a leisurely dinner and then retire to the music room later.
Uh-huh. And then you just happened to wander over to the piano, hum a few bars or something romantic.
You think that's too corny?
George is a corny fellow. He might even bring his saxophone along.
No, I think that's in hawk. Well, you do your best on the dinner, won't you, Patience?
I'll pretend I'm cooking it for my favorite movie hero.
And after dinner, you'll just, leave us?
Oh, sure. Want me to burn any incense?
No, I don't think so. No, George has hay fever.
If it's for free, he's got it.
Well, I've got to finish dressing. Oh, Patience, what can I wear to make him really notice me?
How about a corsage of baked potatoes?
Oh, he is nice, isn't he?
Hungry, but nice.
And tonight might even be the night that, you know.
I know. Tonight might be the night.
I hope the piano's in tune.
The man who plays the sax would never notice.
It's so nice to have a man around the house. It's so nice to have a man around the house. Someone who is glad he found you, who will put his arms around you.
I'm giving 2-1. Nothing happens tonight. Nothing. Harvey.
Good evening, patients. More beautiful with each passing hour.
It's my perfume. Amour Hollandaise.
Turn me aside with a jest, patients, but the flame still burns on.
You'll find a glass of water in the kitchen if it gets too hot. Hey, something happened to you.
Nothing at all.
Sure. Well, have a chair, gorgeous George. Miss Armstrong will be descending the grand staircase momentarily.
Comfortable chair. Pleasant house. Can't beat the cooking either. Hope my jaw's not too sore to enjoy it.
George?
What patient should have told me?
I had no idea you were here. George, what's happened to you?
I brought it on myself.
But I only left
you... It's nothing, Susan, nothing. Susan, you didn't dress just for me.
Dress? Oh, this? Oh, it's just an old thing of mine.
Well, it certainly does things for you, or vice versa, whichever the case may be.
Thank you.
And sorry now I didn't put on my other tie.
Sit down, George.
Huh? Oh, didn't realize I was standing. A tribute to your dress.
You're gallant.
You know, Susan, it always surprises me to see you when you're outside of the office. You look like a different person.
Oh, thanks very much.
I didn't exactly mean it the way it sounded. I just meant that, well, women in business, you know...
Our places in the home.
No, not that at all. In fact, I can't imagine you in a home. I mean...
Yes.
Well, you... what I mean is you... Yes. Where's my hat? I'll go quietly. Oh,
just don't talk so much, George. Well, look. The piano. I haven't played in ages. Do you mind?
No. Won't bother me at all. I mean, I'd love it. I'd love it.
Will you help me move this bench, George?
Certainly. Yeah, that all right? You know, Susan, I was just noticing the candlelight. It does something to you.
Oh, what?
It makes you look, I don't know, changed.
Does it?
Susan, we shouldn't argue all the time. Like that thing today. I shouldn't have blown up the way I did it. It was foolish.
Oh, it's all right, George.
What do we care if some crook peddles a few shares of phony oil stock here in town? Hillsdale hasn't been taken for a long time.
I am sure, George, that the development of the new Hillsdale oil field will do a lot for our city.
Oh, sure. Hillsdale, the new Arabia.
And why not? I have every faith in Mr. Gaston and his organization, and I know
character. You told me.
Now, look, here's something you didn't know, Mr. Harvey. There's an heiress stopping at the General Grant Hotel, Miss Cecily Burnett, and she's here to try and buy up the entire stock issue. Freeze Hillsdale out.
Well, it'll be the warmest winter we ever had.
Oh, George, I mean, you're the most exasperating. Cigarette.
Thank you.
We shall not discuss Mr. Gaston further.
Quite. Ah, the gall of that phony. He sent word that he was quite fascinated with you and would like you to call at the hotel tomorrow.
Oh, how interesting.
Susan, you're not going.
Well, why not?
Why not? You think I'd let you alone with that fake moose?
Well, I fail to see that you have a great amount of choice in the matter.
Oh, you do? Well, if you're going, then I'm going with you.
There seems to be more than the usual confusion in your mind, George. You are a reporter on my paper, not my guardian.
Well, right now, what you need is a guardian.
Dinner,
right amount of jealousy rearing its tousled head?
Oh, sure. Just because I can smell a crook a mile off, it's jealousy.
Well, if you can smell a crook as well as you can scent food, well, I might be impressed.
Personalities. All right, if we're down to personalities, how about...
Dinner is served.
What?
Dinner.
Oh. My arm, Miss Armstrong?
I can manage quite nicely, Mr. Harvey.
Somehow, I doubt very much that tonight is the night.
Now, suppose we get back to our two stars, Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray, in the second act of our story. Let's see now. Susan is just about to go down.
Good morning, patient.
Morning, Miss Armstrong. Your breakfast is ready.
Thank you.
I take it that last night was not exactly an evening with Valentino.
Your assumption is correct, patient.
Too bad. You got a big investment in food in George.
A romance, Patience, cannot be built entirely on stuffed cabbage.
That's open to question. However... Oh, phone. Are you in, Miss Armstrong?
To Mr. Harvey, no.
Hello? Georgie.
I am not in.
She is not in, Mr. Harvey.
Wonder what he wanted.
Well, why didn't you talk to him and find out?
I couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I... Oh... Hello? He wants to know if you're still not in.
Yes.
Hello? She says yes. He wants to know if you said yes, you're not in, or yes, you are in.
I'll take it, patience. Hello?
Susan, I just wanted to make sure you weren't serious about calling on that phony oil promoter today.
Mr. Harvey, As editor of the Star, I cannot see how my appointments are a source of concern to you.
But, Susan, I...
However, your movements as a reporter are in my field. Therefore...
But, Susan...
Therefore, you will cover the PTA convention at 10, the dog show at 11, the Rotarian luncheon at 12, hog breeders exhibit at 1, the chrysanthemum grower show at 2, and be in my office from 3 to 5 to write your stories. Any questions?
Yes. Are you mad at me?
Yes.
Poor Georgie.
Well, morose is a word for Mr. Harvey.
I'm a strong man, Sammy. I wish to brood in silence.
Miss Armstrong has gone to call on the oil promoter. Pretty racy fellows, oil promoters.
Go fill an inkwell.
Why don't you strike back, Mr. Harvey?
How?
In the movies, Mr. Harvey, you would burst in on Miss Armstrong and Mr. Gaston in some suitable disguise. Like, say, a plumber.
Well, that's a silly idea if I ever heard one. Plumber, huh?
Borrow a wrench and a plunger. Your suit is just right for it.
Sammy, I may do it. I may just do it.
The spirit of the pioneers.
And if this Gaston steps one inch out of line, Sammy, where can I get a nice, big, fat wrench?
Yes, ma'am?
Mr. Carter Gaston, I'm Susan Armstrong from the Hillsdale Morning Star.
Oh, come in, Miss Armstrong. Very considerate of you to come.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Gaston.
Here now. Just take this chair, Miss Armstrong, where I can look at you. Like to look a person right smack in the eye, ma'am. Can tell what sort they are in a minute.
Well, I always think so, too.
Nothing shifty-eyed about you, ma'am, if you'll excuse the liberty.
Well, thank you, Mr. Gaston.
And you and I, Miss Armstrong, we can do a lot for this city of yours. Civic betterment.
The greatest good for the greatest number.
Exactly. Did you know, ma'am, that a young lady of great wealth is right here in this same hotel trying to buy up my entire issue of stock before the public gets a chance at it?
Well, you're not going to sell.
Well, I haven't met the lady yet. Miss Burnett, of the Eastern Steamship Burnetts, I believe.
Uh-huh.
But I would much rather give the honest folks of Hillsdale a chance to cash in on the rich natural resources of their little community.
Well, I think that's a fine sentiment, Mr. Gaston.
Why, thank you, Miss Susan. And if you'll permit me to say so, I...
Plumber!
By Joe!
I hear you got a leaky pipe, Mr. Gaston.
Before you come busting in here, son, knock.
No, I'm sorry, but don't let me interrupt anything. I'll just go quietly on with my work.
You were saying, Mr. Gaston?
Yes. If you'll permit me to say so, Miss Susan, the good opinion of a fine woman like yourself means more to me than any...
What?
The good opinion of a fine woman like you means more to me...
I can't hear you.
I said the good...
I found the trouble.
Good. Then you're leaving.
No. I have to rip out a section of the wall here.
Miss Susan, may we continue this conversation over dinner?
Where are you eating?
Will you call me, Mr. Gaston?
Oh, my pleasure, ma'am. Goodbye now. Until tonight.
I'm sorry. I'll be back. I forgot my pickaxe.
George Harvey, if all the low, underhanded, sneaky...
Treacherous?
Yes.
Susan, if you can't see through this whole swindle by yourself...
Well, allow me to make my own judgment, Mr. Harvey. I know character.
I know, Susan. Susan, this oil scheme is a fake. What's more, I think this so-called heiress here in the hotel, this Cecily Burnett, is a fake, too. And I'm going to interview her and prove it.
Oh, you are. Oh, you just love that.
Purely business, Susan.
Oh, you're so right, Mr. Harvey. And I'm going to be around to see that it stays purely business.
Well, Miss Burnett?
Yes?
I represent the Hillsdale Morning Star, Miss Burnett, and...
But how clever of you. I'll take one.
No. You see, Miss Burnett, I'm a reporter.
Well, of course you are. Come in, sit down, report.
Thank you.
No, right here, by me.
Oh.
Now...
Well, just a few questions about your business in Hillsdale, Miss Burnett. You see...
Oh, you want to interview me. You sweet thing, you.
Thank you. You see, there's an oil promotion scheme underway here in town, Miss Burnett, and I...
Brown eyes.
Hmm? Oh. You see, I have reason to believe this Gaston isn't what he presumes to be, and...
6'2"?
No, no. 6'3". Mm-hmm. but if you're really considering putting money into this thing, Miss Burnett, well, I just don't think it would be very wise.
Excuse, please. 3 o'clock snack.
Susan.
Courtesy of the General Grant Hotel.
Put it on the end table. Now then, as I was saying... Oh, how do you know I like wavy hair?
You want it over here?
Yes, and please hurry. Now then, golden boy, your name is,
George. George Hudson.
Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am.
Will you please get out of here? I'm sorry, George. I didn't catch your last name.
It's...
Dope. What did you say?
Oh, I said I hope everything's all right.
Well, it's not all right. Now, you please get out of here and get out fast.
Oh, certainly, ma'am.
Oh, now, where were we, golden boy?
Golden boy. Oh, brother.
I'm sorry, George. Now I know what you want. You want to save me millions of dollars, and you want to tell me all about it tonight over dinner. Right?
Roughly, yes.
Oh, you do sweep a girl off her feet, Georgie. What time is dinner?
Oh, 9-ish?
You speak the language.
Oh, I get around.
But not around me, you reporter.
Until tonight, Cecily.
Oh, until tonight. Au revoir, Georgie.
Au revoir, Cecily.
Oh, these Frenchmen. Irresistible.
Well, Charlevoyer.
Coming in there as a waitress.
Oh, really?
Susan, of all the low conniving.
An heiress. If she's an heiress, I'm Pocahontas.
If you were any judge of character, Pokey, you'd know that this girl is in danger of being the innocent victim of that swindler you were so eager to make a dinner date with.
I was eager? Well, I didn't notice any long pauses in the conversation while you were making a date with her.
We will not discuss conversations overheard through keyholes.
Banging into a room as a plumber. I suppose that's recommended by Emily Post.
Now, you listen, Susan.
Now, you listen to me, George. After all, where you go tonight is not of the slightest concern to me.
Likewise, I'm sure.
Au revoir, Mr. Harvey.
Au revoir, Miss Armstrong.
Good evening, Monsieur Harvey and Madam.
Oh, bonjour, Charles. Table for two, huh?
If you will follow me, please.
Oh, what a delightful little bistro, Georgie. Sort of a subway with music.
It is a little crowded, Cecily.
Yes.
Monsieur Harvey, your table.
Susan.
George. Oh, well, how nice that we should have adjoining tables.
Adjoining? They're practically overlapping.
Oh, Mr. Gaston, you remember Mr. Harvey, the plumber.
Pleasure to see you again, sir.
And Miss Burnett, Miss Armstrong, a waitress.
How do you do? How do you do?
And Mr. Gaston, Miss Burnett.
Real pleasure, Miss Burnett, ma'am. Why did you have to come here?
Quite pleasure, Mr. Gaston. And entirely unexpected, I'm sure.
Huh? Shall we sit down, Cecily?
Yes, of course. Just bring me a shoehorn, Georgie, and I think I can make it.
There. No trouble at all, was it?
Oh, well, pardon me, George. My salad. I know you don't like garlic, so if you'll just wring out your sleeve.
No, sorry. Is that better?
Mr. Harvey, sir, as long as you've got your elbow in my butter, would you mind just running your arm over my corn on the cob?
I certainly would.
Ignore them, Georgie. I'm sure they had a lot to talk about before we came.
Well,
yes, we did have a lot to talk about, didn't we, Carter? Carter? I'm sure George wants to tell Cecily all about the plumbing business, and you were explaining oil to me.
I bet he was.
Oh, we don't have to talk, Miss Susan, when I can feel your little hand in mine under the table.
Oh, but Mr. Gaston, my hand isn't under the... hand, you cheap, double-crossing chiseler!
Oh, Cecily, you...
Out on a business engagement tonight, you told me. Why,
here,
you...
Sit down, dear. Oh, you're an heiress.
Yes, and I'm just about to become a widow, too. Let me at him, George.
Oh, George, yes, George, let her at him.
Now, take it easy, Cecily. Hey, you got trouble, Mr. Gaston?
Glad you come in, Rocky. We're blowing town. My wife, the heiress, just opened her big, rich mouth. Come on, Mrs.
Susan,
Vanderbilt.
Susan, let him get away, George.
I'll stop him, Susan.
Stay here, Rocky. If the demon reporter here gets noisy, keep him quiet. Come on, Cecily.
Well, I can handle him, boss. Hey, sit down there, fire eater.
Sit down, nothing. This time, you muscle-bound clown, I'm going to... Susan, look out!
You take your hands off my George, you...
Hey! The little lady hit me!
And so did I.
Oh, George! You were so masterful.
Oh, you can't fool around forever with George Harvey, Susan.
Oh,
of course, you helped a little.
George, you did it.
Well, have it your way, Susan. We won't argue.
Mr. Harvey, what has happened?
Well, only two for dinner, Charles. The other couple won't be staying.
Our stars, Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray, will be back in a moment.
George.
Yes, Susan?
Finished your story?
Just about. I had a call from police headquarters that they couldn't hold Gasson and his wife. They actually hadn't sold any stock yet.
George, you don't actually think I was taken in by him, do you? Do you?
Susan, you don't actually think that I was taken in even for a minute by his wife, the phony heiress, do you?
Well, I don't if you don't, George. If you know what I mean.
I think I know what you mean. After all, Susan, we both know
no character.
Irene Dunne and Fred McMurray will be back next week in another exciting comedy adventure in the gay new series, Bright Star. This is Harry Von Zell inviting you to join us then.
Bright Star, on Tuned to Yesterday from October 23rd, 1952. And that wraps this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for listening.